All right, welcome. It's your lunch hour. Happy Thursday, everybody. Mr. Credit's here, guaranteeing to make you smarter than everyone else. Man, do we have some interesting stuff to share with you today. I mean, I was going to go in and tell you about the market. Hey, Facebook had a killer quarter yesterday. I mean, the numbers that came from that, 25% of all time, of all of the time that is spent on apps, period, is on either Facebook or Instagram. I mean, these numbers are just unbelievable. We saw the market slide in the last couple hours yesterday, and today we're down just a tad, down 9 points in the Dow, still holding around 13,900. So we're seeing what we expected, a little resistance here. But I tell you, I've got such an interesting guest in the studio today. We've got Siamak Karami, who's the CEO of Sky River IT. You've got such an interesting story, Siamak. I can't wait to get to you in just a second. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Great to have you, my friend. This is a guy who's been all over the world, has lived in Mexico, China, started businesses in China. He's 29 years old. I can't wait to tell you his story. I've also got my financial planner in the studio, Dan Osgood from freeinvestmentaudit.com. Dan, welcome, my friend.
Well, thank you.
Did you see the Facebook quarter?
I did.
That's pretty impressive, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, revenue's up. You know, they were around $900 million kind of when they first went public, and now they're at $1.6 billion.
Right.
Things are looking good. Do you Facebook? You don't Facebook.
I don't.
You don't Facebook. You're not a Facebooker. See you, Mac. Do you Facebook?
I do.
Okay. Have you seen the ads, the mobile ads that have started popping up? They're really not that annoying to me.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah.
I think they're pretty benign. I mean, I haven't really, you know, like seen an ad and been like, gosh, this is so annoying. But they're able to stick them at the top of your feed. So you see it. When you go to Facebook, you see the mobile ad. I mean, it is right. It's the first thing you see. But you can just scroll right past it. I mean, you don't have to click on anything. You don't have to do, you know. I think it's brilliant. I think the amount of impressions you're able to get as a mobile advertiser are tremendous.
Their possibilities are still through the roof as far as revenue generating. Just the whole idea of they could charge every user $1 a year, and all of a sudden that's a huge cash flow.
Oh, and I think it would totally behoove them to do that.
Yeah, and nobody's going to stop using Facebook because it costs them a dollar. You could probably charge them a dollar a month, and no one would quit.
They would. Do you disagree, Adam? Yeah, they would, but only the people who aren't really actively using it, I don't think.
There's
you know?
So many active people that is a big part of their life now. They could easily do that, and that's a test the waters. Find out where your breakpoint is.
Well, you know, they have 685 million people that are actively, you know, using Facebook on a daily basis. I mean, that is an unbelievable.
Just $1 a year. That's a pretty good company.
Staggering sum of people.
I mean, and you know, even a user like me, I don't use it quite often, but you get to stay in touch with your friends. So that way, you know, it's worth a dollar a month.
Yeah, it'd be worth $12 a year. I mean, for most people. For most people, I think it would. And you get down to the younger generation, because there are people who are 15, 16 years old that use Facebook and things like that. There are also people that are in college, you know, maybe who, I don't know, I think those people, I still think it'd be worth it. Mom and dad would pay for it. But anyway, aside from that, even as keeping it as a free service, they're growing the revenues nicely. Now, the stock came off a little bit because Wall Street clearly expected even better figures. But I tell you, it still, you know, looks incredibly good. And that stat that we got about 25% of all the time that is spent on any app on every mobile device is either spent on Facebook or Instagram. That is an unbelievable
stat. And I have to
believe
that number is growing as well.
And it is. It is, in fact. So they have a lot of growth there. There's a lot of things that are going on. It's really an interesting thing. And I tell you, just chatting with CMAC earlier today has really caused me to look myself in the mirror. You know, I complain about the government a lot. We complain about, you know, sometimes the law, taxes, fees, and things like that. And it's because we can't help but be spoiled by certain things, right? I mean, you can't help but be spoiled individual. I mean, we don't even have to watch commercials nowadays if we don't want to. You can TiVo stuff, or you can just, you know, buy the episodes online through iTunes or Netflix and all this stuff. And but then you hear from someone who has not just lived in other countries, but who has started businesses in other countries, and it kind of makes you put your tail between your legs just a tad. CMAC, tell us your story, because you were born in Iran.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. And one of my best friends in college was born in Iran, and the stories he told us were just unbelievable. Things I can't repeat for the most part across the radio. And you lived in Iran until you were how old?
16 and a half.
And how did you leave, and where did you go?
So we went to Mexico City, and I lived in Mexico for a year and a half.
With your family?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And we needed to get our visa to U.S., so we needed to go to a third country.
I see.
Yeah.
So you couldn't get it directly coming from Iran.
We couldn't. We couldn't go directly because there's no embassies there. So
there's no embassies in Iran. So if you're Iranian and you want to come here, you have to go somewhere else first.
Yes.
And so I imagine that wasn't an easy process either.
It wasn't, but yeah, it all worked out. It wasn't an easy process.
So you go to Mexico City. Now you're 16 and a half years old. You're from Iran. You're in Mexico City. What was that like?
It was a huge change for me, going from a country that, you know, Islamic, and there's, you know, you can't drink, you can't do anything as a teenager, to an open country. It was a huge change.
Huge change. Now, you're there. How long are you in Mexico City for?
A year and a
A year and a half.
Yeah.
And then you're 18 years old, and where do you go from there?
I came to U.S., and I went to school here in San Diego. I went to USD.
All right, so you went to USD. Now, help me figure this out. You're from Iran. You go to Mexico City. Are you studying English the whole time? Or, you know, how did you then get into USD, which, by the way, is a pretty prestigious little college there, little university. I mean, you must have been studying and doing incredibly well with your schoolwork.
Yeah, so I was lucky. My parents, when I was back in Iran, when I was young, my parents put me at school to learn English. So I was learning English growing up, and I learned a lot more in Mexico.
More English.
More English in Mexico. And then when I came here, I pretty much spoke the language. I still don't speak it well, but...
Oh, you do speak English perfectly fine.
Perfectly well.
Yeah, so, okay. So that had to be... Now, when you're in Iran, you're learning English. Was that frowned upon?
Yeah. It wasn't... So it was hard, but it was common to learn English, so...
So it was more... It was understood at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because when my buddy had lived there, it was not okay. Or at least from the stories that he had told us in his attempts to learn, he knew he would have his best shot learning English to just find a way to get here. And he had to sneak out of the country somehow, and I don't know exactly how the story went, but he went through a lot to get to this country as well. So it sounds like your parents and your family had to make quite a journey through Mexico City, by the way. I won't even go to Mexico. Right. You know, that's what a spoiled brat I am. Now, so you go to USD, and you go to school there. You're there for, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
Would you get a degree in what?
Business finance.
Then after you graduate, where do you go from there?
An opportunity came along, and I got involved in a part of a team that was building a company in China. And so I went to China directly.
Okay. So how many languages do you have to speak by now? I mean, you speak Arabic, right?
No, Farsi.
Farsi. Okay, yeah. Farsi. You got to have some Spanish because you lived in Mexico City.
Yeah, I speak Spanish very well.
Okay. English. And now you're going to go to China? So you're going to have to learn Mandarin?
Yeah.
And you speak
Mandarin? Yeah, I speak Mandarin enough to get by.
Wow. It's just crazy. So you're a part of this team. You guys go to China to start a company. And this is where our discussion, you know, kind of on the air, went to why the people in the United States get spoiled with how good things are. So tell us about the experience in starting a company in China. Because over here, you talk to some investors and they say China's the next big thing. And, you know, you can't stop China. That's the locomotion that just keeps on trucking. Explain to us what it was like starting that business in China.
So when you look at China, when you're there on the ground, you see that they have the hard infrastructure is in place. You know, they have good roads. They're building bridges, buildings. They have power. They have internet. The pieces that are missing are the hidden pieces. So they don't have the soft infrastructure, which is the legal system, the credit system. It's such a nightmare dealing with basic legal issues in China. So every day we were worried. As a foreign team, we were worried about what can happen with the government. Do we have enough relationships in the government? So that's the piece that doesn't get much coverage. And I think that's an element that we need to really keep in consideration when we say, you know, China is going to grow and it's going to get bigger than U.S. As an investor and an entrepreneur, I wouldn't feel comfortable with going to a country that is not protecting me legally.
So what was it like? So you had to apply for permits or something like that? What was the big hurdle? What was so difficult?
So just to give you a basic idea, you know, to run a company in China, you have to get approval every year from 9 different government agencies. And I had a senior level person that would work on that for 3-4 months each year.
9? What is it? Is it like a certificate or?
You have to get certificates from each each government agency, and they will give you a stamp, and then that stamp lets you operate.
Wow. What about taxes?
So there is taxes on revenue. The tax code is a mess as well. You know, they tax your revenue. So everything you do, 5% of it goes to, whether you are profitable or not, you pay 5% tax on it.
Okay. I'm starting to feel worse and worse about all the complaints I feel here. And the more I talk to CMAC, the worse I feel, Dan. Because now I've been a flat tax guy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And which seems to make sense. Now, do they also have income tax?
They have income tax, too. Yeah.
Okay. So China kind of hits you from both angles. Right. Can you imagine what would happen if they did that here?
It'd have to be a low flat tax on the personal side, I suppose.
Yeah, it would. Because what you mean by taxing revenue, so what he means is you sell something. Let's say, you know, you sell widgets and your widget is you sell for $1,000. The government's taking 5%. So they're going to take $50 off the top. And then you got to take the $950 and go and try to make money. And then whatever you make money on, they're also going to tax that as an income tax.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, some people are paying that tax and some people are not paying that tax. That's another problem there because, you know, depends on who you know, you can get away with certain things, and, you know. So the rules
Which
are
tax?
Different.
The 5%?
The 5%. Okay. So the rules are different for different people, you know.
What about corruption in the government? What is the difference? Because here we know there's corruption in the government pretty much everywhere you go. There's some places where it's really, really bad, and we know it's really bad, like Brazil, for example. It's horrible. What was it like there versus here? Give us an example.
Yeah, so the way the laws work in U.S., things are pretty clear, you know, and there are some loopholes here and there. But in China, the way the legal system is, it's so old and broken that as a company, if you want to grow and you want to build, it's very hard to operate within those limits. So then you have to find a way to, and your competitors are already breaking those boundaries. And you have to find a way. How do they do it? Well, they have relationships. So you have to constantly build relationships within the government so they take care of you. And then it's very inefficient.
Wow. That's so scary, man. I'm so glad it's not like that here. But, I mean, is this – so what I'm hearing from you is that there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about business in the United States.
Absolutely. So the way it works over there is that if you're not connected, you cannot start a company very well. You don't have the chances. Here in U.S., if you have the idea and if you're willing to fight for it, the country, the government, the legal system, the credit system is going to support you. Over there, you're on your own. And if you're competing with one of those guys that has relationships with the government, you're in trouble.
That's a big shining example of it's who you know, not what you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt here. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, who you know definitely doesn't hurt you at all. But, I mean, you couldn't shut down a competitor, you know, with a relationship. But you're telling me that type of thing happens.
Absolutely.
China.
It happens all the time because you're going to break the law. You're guaranteed to break the law, especially if you're doing something innovative because they don't have the rules. And so going back to it, I think a lot of R&D and the entrepreneurship that's happening in China, it's through government agencies. It's very different from here. In U.S., you come up with an idea, you're one man, you go and get angel funding, and then you go after VCs, and then you're there.
Yeah.
In China, usually you want to go to U.S. if you have that kind of idea.
Well, this is – I'm more than intrigued and looking forward to continuing our conversation. Listen, when we come back, I've got to tell you about something that we're not considering. We all take part in this, and it's understandable why we would do it, but we don't know who we're hurting, and I think we have to bring that to light. When we come back, I'll make you smarter than everyone else. We'll have more with Dan Osgood and CMAC Karami from Sky River IT. We'll be right back to make you smarter than everyone else.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, call 888-888-0154 or email through MrCreditRadio.com. That's MrCreditRadio.com.
Well, we all do it, and it's understandable why we do it. I mean, it's free music, right? You've got Pandora, and even the ones that aren't free, because like you can pay for Pandora and you don't have to hear ads. And there's other ones as well, like Spotify and stuff like that. We can go and get this free music. But what's happened is it's caused these musicians to pretty much have no way to make money. I mean, basically, you know, unless you are the thing, there's no such thing as a mid-level. The middle class of musicians is gone. Either you're Jay-Z or you're making no money. And that's really sad. It is. And I don't know if it's wrong or if it's just the market. These musicians need to find a way. These artists have to figure out a way to, you know, make money with their popularity. But a good example in this article from CNBC was this individual. Her name is Zoe Keating. And she's a musician from Northern California. She's a cellist. Cellist, right? Okay. I don't think I listened to the cello on Pandora. But guess what? 1.5 million people did in a given month listen to her song. 1.5 million plays on Pandora. I'm sorry. That was over 6 months. 1.5 million plays. And she made $1,600 over 6 months for bending 1.5 million ears.
But I guess the same thing is, did they get paid when it was on the radio and people were listening? The radio stations were. I don't know the music model. I've always heard that when you put songs out, you really don't make as much off the big record sales as you do by touring.
Exactly.
And that's where most of the artists have always made most of their money?
Yes. Selling CDs, which doesn't happen anymore. Okay. And the tours were the things that you were looking at for revenue. So the record companies were always looking at, well, how many records did you sell, you know, or CDs? How many albums did you sell? And then the way that they really made the most money was in the tours, because each one of those venues, you have the chance to make a lot of money. And if you can be in, you know, three or four places a week, then you have the chance to really, really ring the register.
I'm ashamed to admit this, but I read a Yahoo article that talked about the American Idol alumni and who's being the most successful. And I saw Kelly Clarkson took over from Carrie Underwood. And it talked about most of the revenue from all of these people, even though they're selling big numbers of albums, came from their tours.
Yep.
And that if they didn't have the tours, they'd still be making a great living, but not in comparison to what they're really making because of the tours.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just goes to show you that these people, I mean, that's a pretty popular musician. I mean, if I had 1.5 million people listening to my music in 6 months, I would be unbelievably ecstatic. Yeah. And maybe I would be excited to get the check for $1,600. But at the same time, I go, wow, think about how much time I put into writing this music, composing this music, getting it out here, doing all the things I had to do. And this is my return. So just as you're listening to music, I'm not saying there's anything you can do about this. It's really up to the musicians to figure out how to monetize their success. And it's going to be done through events. You're going to have to figure out ways to do concerts, plain and simple. But just remember that as you're hearing the music, maybe you'll enjoy it just a little bit more. This is one of the things that really bugs me the most. And Dan, I'm glad you're in here because, I mean, by the way, Dan Osgood in the studio, my financial planner with freeinvestmentaudit.com. And there was actually an audit that was done, and now there is a lawsuit that's being filed by the employees of a major financial consulting company called Ameriprise Financial. Now, these employees have sued the firm.
Their own company.
They sued their own company because of a conflict of interest that was being propagated by the company, right, Dan?
Right, right. It was a couple different things: expensive investment options, and they were all proprietary investment options within the plan.
So proprietary meaning they were Ameriprise funds.
Correct.
The funds that they were running, and those funds were the ones that they were being told to sell, or what was
that? That was all that was available within the plan.
So they could only sell their own funds.
Right. So essentially the employees had to invest in these if they wanted to participate in a 401k. And typically I've seen this in many cases whenever these big broker-dealers have proprietary funds, almost always they're at or near the bottom of their peer groups for whatever asset class they're fitting into. It's very rare that you see them outside of that. And a lot of that has to do with they're usually pretty expensive. And just the management, all the good managers go somewhere where they can be a partner and make big dollars. So,
with big upside.
Right.
which is where you want your manager.
Right. You want to be able to pick the best of the best. And this kind of just, as good as 401ks are, and I still think if you have one available to you, it's one of the best choices to put money into. As good as it is, there's not a single company out there, whether it's PIMCO, Franklin, Vanguard, you name it, that has all bases covered. They might be very good in one area, say large cap, but then small cap, they don't do very well. So you're kind of trapped and you're giving up. It's, well, if it happens to be a good year for large cap, you might do really well. But if it's a good year for small cap, you're going to not do as well.
Right.
So you're trapped, and that's why it makes sense to look at other options besides your company's 401k plan, especially if you no longer work at your company.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, this is just – it's crazy to me because you see employees suing their own company a lot of times for all sorts of reasons, sexual harassment. You got this. You got that. You know, your people being overworked, not getting paid overtime. You see all those things. But then you see a financial advising firm.
Right.
Its advisors suing the company for not giving them the proper choices themselves within their own 401k. I mean,
right.
How insane.
It again goes back to the broker-dealers always are looking out for their own bottom line. So they were making money off of the money going into these investment vehicles more so.
Right. That's what they're looking at.
And again, it's like, wow, if we can get a couple extra million going into this plan, we're going to make this much more money. It's going to look better on our bottom line.
And so that's where the focus is.
Right.
And that's the problem.
That's that conflict of interest.
Huge conflict of interest. I mean, it should be in the definition on the dictionary for conflict of interest. And this is part of the reason because you worked in this world for a long time.
Yeah, I was in there for about 13 years in the broker-dealer world. And that's kind of how the whole free investment audit came to be. Is while I was there, didn't even realize how bad the conflicts were and where they existed in all the different places. I always knew in order to do everything that was right for my clients, I needed to go independent and move away from the broker-dealers and them telling me what I needed to do for my clients, not listening to my clients and do what they wanted me to do for them. But within that, once I got out, I really started looking at the different things I had been doing as a best practice in these other firms and realized that, wow, they, again, the companies were just looking out for themselves. They were not looking out for the client's best interests.
And it's so unbelievable because you would think that they're, you know, this industry that's so highly regulated. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so highly regulated could have these significant conflicts of interest built into the revenue model.
Right.
I mean, it just makes no sense. And so here you have someone like Dan Osgood who said, you know what, I'm going to do this the right way. I'm going to set it up in a situation where an individual can do one very easy thing and can go look me up, freeinvestmentaudit.com, where I'll be able to provide them with an audit of their investments that will help expose these potential conflicts, the cost. Okay, what do you own? This is a huge topic right now, especially after Apple lost, you know, 30%+ value over the course of a couple of months. A lot of these mutual funds super overweight on Apple stock. Some of them pulling the trigger and pushing it up a little bit more here. Now, is that you need to know if that's what your fund is doing?
Right.
Is your fund buying more Apple right here? Would you buy more Apple right here? You know, ask yourself that question. What do you own? So that's huge. What do you own? Do you own enough Amazon? You know, or one of these other companies that you really like that you would invest your own money in. Maybe you should buy a fund that believes in them or has a big position there. These are the types of things you can do if you know what you own. Cost. Most people don't know that it costs you to own every single fund that you own. It costs you money. And then the question is, well, how much? And is that too much for what you're getting? Or is it a good deal? Well, my guess is that you probably couldn't tell me.
I've seen both sides of that, too, in these audits. I've seen some portfolios that are great, and I tell the people, hey, what you have is great. And then more often than not, it's not that way. It's things that are very expensive. And that just gives them, the person, ammunition to go back to their advisor and say, hey, what's going on here? How come I'm in these really expensive funds? Or why are we doing this when there's other options that are much cheaper?
Exactly. Cheaper, that might have the same holdings or might have better management.
Right.
Or just might be, you know, more flexible, or they might have a better track record. There are a number of different things to consider there. And then the other thing here is where is your risk tolerance? Mm-hmm. So you got three components to this audit. It's 100% free. What do you own? What is it costing you? And what is your risk? You know, how much risk are you exposed for versus what you're comfortable with from the standpoint of, you know, how old are you? What type of personality are you? These are all things that are incredibly important to a financial plan. And yet I'm willing to bet that whatever type of plan you have together, whether you did it on your own or did it with someone, you probably can't tell me any one of those three things. That would be my guess, is that you won't be able to tell me either one of those three things. This is why the investment audit is something that everyone should do, no matter how big or small your portfolio is. Get the audit. It's free, and it will probably blow you away once you have all the information. Freeinvestmentaudit.com is the website. You just simply put in your info. Dan will call you. He'll get the information he needs to do the audit. Freeinvestmentaudit.com, or call the helpline at 888-888-0154. It's 888-888-0154. When we come back, reasons to be optimistic? How many are there? I mean, I've already said I think the stock market goes up 12% this year. And do I feel bad about that prediction now? Or am I thinking that I was being too conservative? When we come back, we'll make you smarter than everyone else. Stick around.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, call 888-888-0154 or email through MrCreditRadio.com. That's MrCreditRadio.com.
Adam, have I told you this is one of my favorite songs? Or are you just, are we just right here, like that?
I think we're connected.
We are, okay. So you either read my mind, or you know, I'm talking to you somehow. Love the Foo Fighters. So here we go. Now this, I'm just going to tell you right now. Before the start of the year, we came on here. We made some predictions about what would happen in the stock market this year. I said we were going to see a 12% increase in the S&P index. I felt pretty good about it at the time. Now, after having seen, you know, what's happened with Apple, after having seen what's happened with Facebook, after talking to CMAC, I feel that I may have been conservative there. I feel like we might see even more of an increase. Now, I'm even more optimistic than I've ever been. And I'll give you another story that points to the reason why. We know, we've known for quite some time now, Dan, that, you know, the retail investors – a lot of people are in cash. Mm-hmm. I've continued to get questions. You know, I had another conversation last week with someone who has a lot of money in cash. They've been out of the market for a while. They've missed some of this rally. And there are a lot of people in cash. And what we've found out is with some of these numbers that have come out, that there is probably even more cash on the sidelines than we even thought there was.
Right. And I would say probably the biggest reason I could think of is there's still a lot of the retail world that's still shell-shocked from 08.
Yeah,
because there were a lot of really conservative portfolios that lost 20%+, and people that were ready to retire, that now those plans changed and they have to work 5 or 10 more years because their portfolios were just blown up in 08. So it's understandable that there's heavy caution because you don't want to go through that again. If you finally make the decision, okay, it's time, and whoops, there it goes again, another 15% or 20%, now you're working till the grave.
Right. Right, no, very good point. And a lot of people got shocked in you know, 2000 or 2001, 99. I mean, there's been a lot, you know, over the course of the past 15 years.
But
really,
even that wasn't as shell-shocking because it was spread out over a few years. Where 08, it was just boom, 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 done.
There were some crazy days.
Yes.
I was trading futures.
Yeah. hopefully you were playing the downside.
Well, we had to play both directions. It was so crazy. There were so many days I just stared in amazement at what the action. I had to stay out because it was just frightening to be in. But, you know, some of these things that we found out here, and one of the things that was reported in the Yahoo Daily ticker, was that money actually continued to leave the market throughout the year of 2012. Retail money left. Exited. Hundreds of billions of dollars left the market, yet it still went higher, 16% for the year.
I think if you look at the overall average volume for the year, it was
very
low.
Yeah,
which that explains it. In low volume, typically you see the market go positive.
Yeah. Well, we're definitely seeing that. I mean, the volume has continued to decrease since 2007. I mean, if you look at it charted out on a weekly of the Dow, you will see that the, you know, the average volume has decreased over that time. And when the market goes higher and the volume goes lower, that's typically divergence that would signal some sort of downward pressure, you know, is due. The hard part is that, you know, when is that going to happen? And how much is it going to be? Is it going to be when the stock market gets to 20,000? I mean, when is it going to be? You know, we don't know. And so that's the hard part about it, is trying to figure out the when and why, you know, in having your investment plan and your retirement plan and your financial plan in place is so comforting for people, because then you don't have to try to figure that stuff
right out. It really takes that out of the equation.
It takes care of itself. It functions on its own. But this is just another reason for me to be positive in the market, in my mind, because I continue to talk to people who are uninvested. You know, there's only so much real estate you can buy, and that seems to be where everyone's pointing, and that makes sense too. But then, you know, at some point, you've got to invest in something. I mean, you know, if you just sit on this money, how long is it going to take before you realize that that's actually costing you money?
Right.
You're losing money by sitting on it, because there's no place to just stick it that's safe. Your bank account, a CD, you know, that stuff is costing you money.
I mean, it makes your mattress pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, it does. It's very hard to get it evenly distributed, especially since they don't print the $100,000 bill anymore.
they are going to print a big coin, right?
Yeah, the platinum bajillion dollar platinum coin.
Maybe good if you have a bad back.
Oh, man, you have to hollow one of those things out so you could live in it. It would be so freaking big. But so just another reason, I think, to be positive. And then talking to CMAC, and by the way, if you missed the introduction to him earlier in the program, CMAC is the CEO of Sky River IT. He's 29 years old, born in Iran, spent the first 16 and a half years in Iran. Family moved to Mexico City because you couldn't immigrate directly to the United States. You had to go through a third-party country. So they go to Mexico City for a year and a half. He does well with his studies. He studies English. He speaks Farsi, Spanish, learning English. Does good enough in school to go to USD. Goes there, studies finance, spends 4 or 5 years there doing finance, and then starts a business in China, learns Mandarin, understands how business stuff works in China. And CMAC, you're very positive on what it's like to do business in the United States versus other countries, because you've got all these experiences in these other countries. You kind of know how they work. You've given us a couple of things already about, you know, just the government and what it takes to start a company, and, you know, how easy it is to go in, the law, and everything works on your behalf. The infrastructure works on your behalf as far as getting funding, starting your corporation. Everything is kind of there to help you succeed. What else is it about the United States that you like for business?
So one thing that I've seen, U.S. is a very unique place. One of the reasons for that is that this is a country of change. You know, we try things, we believe in some direction, we go at it, and as soon as we realize it's wrong, we go back, we go the other direction. And we quickly try things, figure them out, we go the other direction, we try to get ourselves better. In the rest of the world, that doesn't happen. So as an example, if somebody makes a mistake here, goes to jail, gets in trouble, and when he comes out and says, "I'm sorry, I made a mistake," everyone else in the society accepts that person. In the third world countries, once you make one mistake, there's no room for you to come back. This is an element. It's very unique to U.S. And I don't know, it's because people that moved here, they like change. You know, they're the guys that pack their stuff and came overseas without even knowing what it looked like, yeah, a few generations
that
ago.
That's pretty crazy to think about. They just like, well, let's just go get in the boat and see what we see. It could be nothing but rocks and sand. Who knows? No, you're right. And so the change aspect, and that flows all the way down to the smallest things that we do in life. I mean, you know, from television to, you know, pushing a button to going from one thing to the next, or in business, being able to say, okay, well, we're going to try to go this direction, and if it doesn't work, we can just easily shift and go this direction. And is that kind of what you're talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what's the advantage of that versus, you know, some of these other countries that you've experienced?
So we take action quickly, and then we realize it was wrong, we admit it, and then we go the other way. In the third world countries, a lot of times nobody wants to admit they're wrong. So they go that direction, you know, they know it's wrong, and it takes them a long time to turn around.
Until they can find someone else to blame it on.
Keep going down that same bad road.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So when did you ultimately decide you were in China? You were running a company there. It was incredibly difficult to do. When did you decide to come back to the U.S. and start your own company here?
It was about 4 years ago when I came back. And even though I was very well connected to in China, I knew the system well. I decided to start something here because I didn't want to deal with the headaches of dealing with the government and, you know, uncertainty, all the gray areas. And the platform here is very, very easy and great to work in. You know, building a company, starting from scratch. And people give you chances here. I started a company where in an area I didn't have much experience in. I'm a finance guy. IT used to report to me, and I had a lot of frustrations with IT. You know, I didn't understand what we were spending money on. I didn't understand why things weren't working. I didn't understand if I had the right guys. So when I started the company, it was tough, but people give you chances. And it's been great since then. We've been growing.
And how long ago did you start the company?
3.5 years ago.
3.5 years ago, you started Sky River IT. You're not an IT guy.
Yes, I'm not an IT guy.
You don't know how IT works. So you started this company as a businessman who essentially had frustrations with something, and you decided that, you know what, I want to try to create a slippier way to do this. You know, this is too rough. This is too coarse. Let's find an easier way to essentially create IT solutions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We want to solve that problem for guys like me that are business guys. They don't understand IT. And there's a big disconnect. The IT guys, unfortunately, don't understand the business side. Us business people, we don't understand the IT side of things. So that gap, we want to fill that.
It's a very, very difficult thing because I feel like you understand, you know, computers and stuff like that, or you don't. And if you don't, it's very, very frustrating. I mean, for a long time, you know, one of the first companies I started, I was the only one who really had the patience to try to figure out how to do this. Is like when, I don't know, T1s first came out and you could even get one, like the late 90s. You know, it was like the first time you could do internet and people were talking about internet voice over IP and stuff like that. And I was the only one who could mess with it. So I'm running this company. I had to be kind of the IT guy as well. And I broke stuff every day. Because just out of frustration, I mean, slamming phones down, breaking keyboards. I would buy these keyboards from Staples. They were like $10, a really cheap USB ones when they first came out. And I'd stack up about a dozen of them in the corner of my office. That was the worst thing I could have done, actually, because that encouraged me to break them every time I got frustrated. But it felt so good. I had to do it. And so that was my experience with IT. And then we finally hired someone to come in and be our internal IT person. And I couldn't have had more friction with an individual, you know? It's such a complicated thing to deal with, you know, when you're trying to
To that person, it was such a simple thing. He was having the issues with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Not understanding what was so simple for him.
It was easy.
I understand that.
He understood what was going on. Uh-huh. But when you're running a sales team and you've got, you know, 35 phone lines and you've got, you know, 35 computers and all the stuff revolves around the same thing. Right, it all revolves around technology now, and it has for over a decade. And so understanding how all that stuff works and making it work is very interesting, and I want to talk to you more about that when we come back. I tell you, this is one of the things that I have enough experience in to be dangerous. I really do. I mean, there's so many different things to consider. We'll get some more insights and make you smarter than everyone else when we come back. It's your Lunch Hour, Mr. Credit, ESPN 1700.
If you'd like to speak with Mr. Credit, call 888-888-0154 or email through MrCreditRadio.com. That's MrCreditRadio.com.
Welcome back. Thanks for hanging out, Mr. Credit here. I appreciate you. Having another meeting today with a listener who is a business owner and just wants to pick my brain. You know, that's something I've offered to the community. I've got a couple more times set up to go into the high schools. Just a couple of things that we're doing to help the community out. And just what I do with those meetings, if you're interested in having one, it's very easy. Just email MrCreditRadio.com. And we can set it up. And essentially what we do is I'll just sit for half an hour, talk with the business owner, give them whatever information I can to help them with their business, you know, maybe introduce them to somebody else or something like that. We've got people who are starting up companies or people who own, you know, companies that, you know, they're having trouble with, they're struggling. trying to figure out, you know, how can I get to the next level? How can I get past this? And I'm open to give that advice for free. We set up a half-hour sit-down, and we do that. So I've got another one of those today, and those are really, really fun for me. And if that's something that you're interested in, email MrCreditRadio.com. So, you know, we've got a number of things here on the table for today, and we've given you a number of different things that I think are incredibly interesting. I mean, the talk with CMAC and just kind of what's gone on in your life and what you've experienced out there. We talked about IT, which is the company that you decided to start. And it's an interesting story about how you got to that point of wanting to start an IT company. I mean, that is the absolute last thing on my list of things that I would ever want to do. I mean, just completely honest with you, as much frustration as I've had in that realm, why that? I mean, you know, and why did you decide to go in that route? And what made you think that you could successfully do something so complex without being an IT guy yourself?
So I understood the service business. Okay, I had a good understanding of the service business, and I also knew what the client wants. You know, I was a client of IT services, so I knew from my perspective, this is what needs to be out there. If that was out there, if the service existed, then I could use it and I would pay for it. So that's what made me decide to go this route.
I see. So and that's a lot of times how good businesses are started. I mean, that's pretty much exactly how freeinvestmentaudit.com.
Right. That's why I am where I am now.
Yeah, because you were essentially in that position where you saw a need for something that didn't exist. Same thing from your perspective, CMAC. But this is CMAC Karami, by the way, who's the CEO of Sky River IT. So you saw the need. You're thinking to yourself, well, I've been the customer before, so I have the customer's mindset, and so I feel like I could go out and start a business that fulfills the needs of that customer. Even without experience in the business, I guess your goal at that point or your plan was to hire people who understood the ins and outs of how to execute the business.
Yes, yes. So, and the great part about that coming from outside of the industry is that you see all the norm in the industry, things that people do that you can do differently, and it gives you a good perspective. So we're doing a lot of things different from the rest of the.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing that some of the simplest things, I mean, you guys have so much synergy between what you do, because that's, I mean, the exact type of things that I see with freeinvestmentaudit.com and Dan Osgood, who's also in the studio with us today, is that you guys do things completely different than what other people who have similar companies or similar services that they provide do, and they're so tremendously better. Isn't it amazing when you look at a company and you go, these guys don't do the simplest things in the world, like keep their customers informed or, mm-hmm. you know, communicate at all. And it's because they've gotten so focused on these norms that exist out there and having to be like everyone else that they forget that part of what's great about doing business, and especially now that I've learned about doing business in the United States, is that you have the ability to completely be unique.
Right. You don't have to fit into the box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, Dan, if you could have even done free investment audit in China or one of these other countries.
I would bet no, but
probably not.
I've never tried.
Right? But I mean, yeah. Would it have even been possible? Or would the government have their hands in pockets or, you know people who run these other big firms that would have said, no way, shut that guy down. Don't let him tell people everything that they need to know about what their investments are. We need them in the dark about that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, would that have been the case? I don't know. America's beautiful. I love it. So we got to, you know, kind of reset, and you've really given me that, and I appreciate it because we need that perspective. IT is something that's very different. So now I kind of know why you decided to start this company. What are the different services that you provide to, you know, business owners?
So there's two elements of our services. One of them is around the end users. So, you know, when you're having IT problems as an end user, you want to get that solved right away. So we've created a help desk that's 24/7. It's based in U.S. so people can understand what your problem is when you're frustrated and you right. don't want to explain it. So that's one element. So we take care of those problems that you have on a day-to-day basis. And also what we do that a lot of IT departments or IT consulting firms don't see IT. IT is not usually aligned with your business. And our goal is to align your IT needs with your business. So where you're going in the future, understanding how your business operates and how can you leverage technology to make it better. So usually there's a big disconnect between IT and the rest of the business. So our goal is to align that.
Okay. That's very unique.
That sounds like the whole idea of financial planning. Same concept as you create a plan for this is where you are today, this is where you want to go, this is how we get there. It sounds like that's exactly what you're doing.
Bridge the gap.
Yeah. That's interesting, yeah.
Which most people are just, okay, this is what your needs are now. Let's just create a solution for today, and then we're done. And if you have a problem in the future, then we'll sit down and do something different. So you're very proactive. I like that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You create the bridge, basically, between, you know, there's, and that is kind of how a lot of these companies, I've worked at big companies, I've consulted for big companies. It's like IT is over here in their own castle, and you don't walk in there unless you speak their language, basically. You know? You just don't. It's a bad idea. Because they can shut your email down. You know, so you stay away from those guys.
They will make your life miserable.
They can. But more importantly, they have the ability to fix your life when it becomes miserable. Right. And that's when you want to call in the favors. So, you know, you got to kind of buddy up to those guys. And what I've learned through working in these different environments is that it's incredibly important, becoming ever more so, as we see companies going to paperless systems. Mm-hmm. We see companies operating and having people work remotely. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many people work for a company that has an office space and they have a desk, but they're only in the office maybe a day or two a week? I mean, that's happening more and more and more and more. And they're just remoting into their computer and everything is still kept secure and all that stuff. And it's all housed there in you know, in the office. But I imagine that the amount of change and adaptation that you have to make as a service provider to help maintain all of those technologies has got to be a tremendous undertaking.
Yes, it is. So we have to we do a lot of work around touching base with the team members and making sure we have the right information and making sure we're working with the clients to constantly communicating with them.
Yeah. Communication is unbelievably key in something like that.
One other point in this industry is that the talent that's in the talent pool that's in our industry is drawn to technology, but we don't train our talent that at the end of the day, as an IT person in an IT department, you're going to deliver service. So you have to improve your communication skills. You know, it's a very complex space, but we have to have good communication skills to be able to do the job. So that's a critical piece that we're working on.
See you, Mac, for president, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that is makes too much sense. You know, how often do you have an issue, a technical-related issue, and you might be on, you know, doing a live chat with someone who knows everything about how to fix your problem, but you guys just do not talk the same language.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That happens all the time.
You're asking one question, and he's answering a different question.
Or he's asking you questions, and you don't have any idea what he's talking about. I mean, that happens all the time. So I'd love to see that you've taken something like this and been so successful. See Matt Karami, the CEO of Sky River IT, appreciate you coming on the show today, man. That was a great story. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic stuff, Adam. Great job running the show today. And as always, Dan Osgood, my financial planner, with freeinvestmentaudit.com, something everyone needs to do, no matter how big or small your portfolio is. Be smarter than everyone else, know what you own, know what it's costing you, and know what your risk tolerance is. Match it up with your investments. The only way that you can create a financial plan and sleep well at night. Freeinvestmentaudit.com is where you can get that information from Dan for free. Dan, appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you guys very, very much. All right, stick around. Big Mac and Ryan White are coming right at you. We'll be back again tomorrow at noon to make you smarter than everyone else.